This episode is brought to you in part by June's Journey. Picture it, the glamour of the roaring 20s wrapped in a mystery that only you can solve. Dive into June Parker's captivating quest to uncover scandalous family secrets. With your keen eye for detail, find hidden clues and solve mind-boggling puzzles. It's all about observation, intrigue, and drama. But beware. Each clue leads deeper into a thrilling storyline filled with danger and romance. June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. You hear that? That's the sound of another sale with Shopify, your go-to for selling everywhere. Online, in-store, and even on social media. Shopify POS is like the central hub for your retail operation. From payments to inventory, it's all there. Got different gadgets? No worries. Shopify's hardware is adaptable, fitting just how you do business. Start transforming your retail business with an incredible offer. A trial for just $1 per month at shopify.com/wondery, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/wondery. Take the leap and upgrade your point-of-sale solution with Shopify. Visit shopify.com/wondery and start your trial today.
There's a group of guys I grew up with in Annapolis. None of us had it easy. Some had trouble in school. Others had trouble with the cops. A lot of us were missing our dads, and we were pretty ungrateful for our moms, who juggled multiple jobs to keep us fed. But we had each other, and I think that's why we all found a path to a better life. Every few years, we'd meet up back at home at a nice restaurant to drink, joke, and show off pictures of our kids. What we don't talk about is the other guys we knew who didn't make it. But sometimes, the past catches up with you. The last time we met up, we just popped open a bottle of red when my buddy looked out of the window. He went pale and asked, "Is that Simon?" A disheveled man shuffled on the street trying to chat up strangers. Once I saw his yearning eyes, I knew it was him. Simon was like a kid brother to us, a 15-year-old kid brother nobody wanted. He was needy and earnest, like a sad clown, and he clung to us like a barnacle. We tolerated him, but hell, even if we'd bullied him, he'd probably thank us for the attention. Simon's dad always had a get-rich-quick scheme and never had a job. Simon's mom was working on a nursing degree, but her real passion was being in a bad mood 24/7. The year after my crew graduated, Simon's dad ran off. Poof, no goodbyes. His mom worried about keeping her son on the straight and narrow, so she moved to a small town outside of Frederick, Maryland. It was supposed to be a fresh start, but Simon fell in with the wrong crowd. You're listening to Run Fool. I'm Rodney Barnes, and this is episode 19, The Snallygaster Gang. Simon opened a kitchen cabinet in the dingy apartment that he still refused to call home. This cabinet was empty too, except for an old pasta box. He worried he'd be late for the bus, but he was still so hungry. He opened one last cabinet, fantasizing about finding it full of Pop-Tarts and Oreos, Slim Jims and popcorn. All the things families had on TV. All the things he didn't. The door creaked open. His mother, Sherry, trudged in, clad in nursing scrubs. Weary after a night shift, she gave him a stiff hug and a kiss, like she was ticking it off a checklist. Then, she asked why he hadn't left. She did not raise him to be tardy. Simon whined. "I was hungry, okay?" Sherry softened. Looking guilty, she rifled in her scuffed purse and set some plastic-wrapped things on the counter. A cookie, celery and carrot sticks, a banana so brown it might as well have been a turd, vending machine food from the hospital, or maybe a gas station. Simon was usually good at minding his mom's moods, but today he sulked. "Back when we were a family, Dad used to make me eggs." Sherry bristled. "Well, all your dad made me was cry. Your father was not family. A real man sacrifices things he wants for his family. All he did was sacrifice us for the things he wanted. Simon asked, what if he got a job? Then he could provide, and she wouldn't have to work so much. Sherry said no. She didn't want him out all hours. The streets were quiet, but they weren't safe. More and more people were coming into the hospital, mugged, beaten, drugged. She insisted, besides, we've got a home, hot water, and food, even if it's not to your liking, Chef Simon. What else do you need? Simon blurted, more. Sherry asked, more what? Simon mumbled, just more. Sherry's brows knit together in pain. Simon grabbed his bag and ran out. He didn't want her to see his cheeks turn red with shame. Simon sat alone at the back of the bus, cleaning his glasses. He'd stopped trying to talk to other kids since they always recoiled, like they could smell the stink of losing on him. He perked up when the bus pulled over at a stop, on the edge of the woods. He wondered, would they show up today? On cue, three older kids emerged from the trees and sauntered on, Ray, Eddie, and Bill. Eddie and Bill were in garish getups, a mashup of hip-hop and hair metal, like they'd raided a department store blindfolded. Ray was cloaked in a studded leather jacket, eyes hidden behind red wayfarers. People told wild stories about them. They tied up their foster parents for a week just for fun. They were dealers. They got suspended for having a four-way with the school nurse. They were devil worshippers who lived in the woods and sacrificed baby rabbits to Satan. Scary stuff. But Simon admired them because they moved like a pack. Powerful, confident, and connected. And though they were cruel to those around them, they were oddly tender with each other. Right now, the driver was yelling at Eddie, calling him a disgrace because his shirt had a topless lady on it. You could tell it hurt Eddie, so Ray loomed over the driver and said, have a heart. That's the only photo he's got left of his dead mom. The driver looked bewildered. Ray put an arm around Eddie and led him down the aisle, while Bill told him the shirt was cool. Simon smiled as he watched them, but it faded when they walked up to him. Ray jerked his head like, move. Simon knew he should, but something told him not to. Instead, he grinned and pointed at the bench. Plenty of room for all of us. Kids turned to gawk. Eddie and Bill leaned in to grab him, but Ray stopped them. He took off his sunglasses to look at Simon, amused, like a lion toying with a mouse. Then he sat, and his goons followed. Simon had to remind himself to breathe. Ray reached in his jacket and pulled out a cherry red Walkman, a tape player for those of you who weren't around back then. He slipped his headphones on, and Simon asked, what you listening to? Ray glared and said, the Bible on tape. Simon figured he was joking, so he laughed. He didn't want to lose momentum, so he asked how much the Walkman cost. Ray gave him a withering stare. I don't know. I stole it. Simon nodded. Cool. Ray grunted, then jiggled the headphone jack. He said the dumb thing wasn't worth it. Half the time, he couldn't hear. Simon said the jack socket looked loose. He put his hand out, nodding at Ray to give him the Walkman. Ray looked surprised, but grateful. He wouldn't be if he knew Simon was making up the diagnosis to keep him talking. Simon took the Walkman and furrowed his brow, hoping to look like a helpful geek. Then the bus flew over a bump. The Walkman flew out of Simon's hand, landed on the floor, and cracked. His heart raced as Ray spoke, ice cold. You're gonna replace that. Simon babbled. He was sorry, but he didn't get an allowance, and he'd spend his birthday money on comic books. Ray grabbed his arm, squeezed hard, and grinned. Then I guess you're gonna have to steal one. That night, Simon crept through the Radio Shack at the mall, sweating buckets in his bulky sweater. He wanted to run home, but Ray, Eddie, and Bill were waiting by the fountain outside. Simon eyed a display of Walkman in vibrant colors, then looked around. There was a zoned-out guard at the door, two cashiers, but they were flirting in the back. Simon sighed. For once, it was good that everyone seemed to ignore him. Except this weird guy stood at the end of the aisle, smiling. He wore black and purple. His pale arms were covered in tattoos, and there was a mystical eye tattooed above his brow. He was older, but there was also something jittery and youthful about him. like a goth Peter Pan. The man walked off. Simon took a breath. It was time. He locked his eyes on a red Walkman. He grabbed the slim box, put it under his sweater, and tucked it in his waistband. Done. Simon ambled to the exit, praying his walk wasn't too weird. He moved past the guard, who smiled. Ever eager for kindness, Simon waved at him, and the Walkman fell out. The guard stood. Outside, Simon saw Ray and his goons run off. He was on his own, until the strange man he'd seen walked over to pick the Walkman up. He shook his head. "I saw you take this, boy, and it just ain't right." Simon opened his mouth to beg for forgiveness, but the man handed him the box. "The earbuds that come with it are garbage. Gotta get a good set of headphones. Say, buddy, you mind grabbing some Sonys for the kid?" The guard protested. The kid was a thief. The stranger opened his mouth and let out an ear-splitting shriek that sounded like a train whistle. The world fell dead silent, and everyone in the store went still. The stranger leaned into the guard's ear and ordered,
"Get them."
Stiff as a robot, the guard went off and brought back headphones. His face contorted in agony, every fiber of his being telling him to stop. But he handed them to Simon. Using the same eerie voice, the stranger said,
"Nap time."
The guard fell to the ground. Simon looked up and realized the stranger was gone.
If you're like me and can still recognize Mr. Brightside from the first note, and then can't resist screaming it at the top of your lungs, you're a millennial. And if you're a millennial, it's time to add Clarins Multi-Active Cream to your daily routine. Rooted in nature and innovated with science, Clarins has a long legacy of creating industry-first, plant-forward products. Using a skin charger complex made of 2% niacinamide and sea holly bioextract, Clarins Multi-Active Cream has been clinically proven to target the first visible signs of aging by smoothing lines and wrinkles, refining pores, evening tone and texture, and strengthening the skin's moisture barrier. While multi-active cream can bring back the golden age of boy bands, it can de-stress your skin. Clarins Multi-Active Cream is available online now. Go to clarins.com/truecrime and get multi-active day and night cream for 10% off, a free welcome gift, plus free shipping on your first order. That's clarins.com/truecrime with promo code TRUECRIME. clarins.com/truecrime with promo code TRUECRIME. What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Simon scrambled out to the parking lot, where he was almost run over by a black convertible. It stopped, purring with menace. Simon saw that the stranger was at the wheel, with Ray beside him and Eddie and Bill in the back. He cried, "Wait!" He ran to hand the stolen Walkman to Ray, who looked surprised. Then he thanked the stranger and asked his name. The man grinned. "Call me Geist. Want to go for a ride?" Ray glowered. Clearly, he didn't want Simon to come. But Simon smiled. "Yep." Geist's car sped along winding roads on the outskirts of town. He joyfully sang along to a Motown song blasting from his car's tape deck. Simon sat in front, squeezed between Geist and a pissed-off Ray. This was the most thrilling night of his life, and he had a feeling it was just the beginning. He yelped when Ray lunged across him to turn down the music. Geist chuckled. "You're such a moody Judy." "Relax, Ray. How about a beer run?" Eddie and Bill whooped. Ray shrugged. Geist looked to Simon. The kid's voice cracked as he said he didn't have any money. Geist cackled. "Me neither, buddy." Geist swerved into an empty liquor store parking lot. It was closing time. A lone employee swept up inside. Eddie and Bill jumped out. Geist looked at Ray, then nodded to the glove box. Ray opened the glove box. Simon worried he'd pull out a gun, but he retrieved an old piece of cloth. It looked like a hood or an executioner's cowl. Ray's hand trembled, and he whispered,
"Not yet."
Geist's eyes narrowed. "Fine. Beer will fill me. For now." Simon wasn't sure what was going on. It was like a secret code he was desperate to understand. Geist and Ray got out. Simon followed, but Geist pushed him back in the seat with paternal gentleness. "Stay here, kiddo. Enjoy the show." Simon watched them go into the store. The employee got annoyed, then scared, as the boys surrounded him and Geist whispered in his ear to work his magic. The clerk dropped, convulsing. Then Ray, Eddie, and Bill hooted and hollered through the aisles, grabbing bottles, chugging some, smashing others to the ground. The store doors were closed, so Simon couldn't hear the chaos inside. With the Motown playing in the car, it just felt like he was watching a hilarious movie with a great soundtrack. He laughed. Until he saw a second employee creep out from a back room, nervously loading a shotgun, headed for Ray. Geist and his boys couldn't see her, and Simon knew he had to act fast. He slammed the car horn. Geist's eyes shot up. Simon pointed. The gang turned to see the employee take aim. In a panic, Ray looked across the store at Geist. Geist rolled his eyes, then jerked his head. "Duck!" Ray dropped, and Geist broke into a run. Simon was stunned to see the older man leap into the air like a superhero. He hovered, gleeful menace burning in his eyes. Then Geist pounced on the employee, ripped the gun from her hands, and knocked her down. Simon couldn't see exactly what was happening, but he saw the rifle go up and down and up and down in Geist's grip. The way the rifle got bloodier each time it came up, Simon knew Geist was using it to give her a serious beating. Ray crawled away, unable to watch. He was horrified, but Simon wasn't. It was the coolest thing he'd ever seen. Geist told his crew to stay behind while he drove Simon home. When Simon protested, Geist said, "You don't want to be a sleepy Simon at school tomorrow, do you?" Simon laughed. Geist was odd, like a devil and an angel on his shoulder. He wanted to ask where he'd come from and why he was doing this, but he figured any answers would raise more questions. He was just going to enjoy the ride. They parked at Simon's apartment. Geist pulled out the stolen Walkman, then grabbed some tapes from his dashboard. He handed them to Simon and said they were his. Simon protested. The Walkman was Ray's. But Geist insisted. He'd earned it. Simon felt a rush of warmth and asked if he could ride with them again. Geist shrugged, a twinkle in his eye. "I guess that depends on what the boys think." Simon barely slept, but he didn't feel tired in the morning. He felt pumped. With Geist's tunes blasting on his Walkman, he packed his school bag and went to the living room, where he saw his mom was home, frying up some eggs. Simon cautiously took a seat while Sherry told him she'd switched her shifts around. She was figuring out how to provide more for him. She was excited, present, motherly, until she clocked the Walkman. "Where'd you get that?" Simon hesitated, then said he'd borrowed it from a friend. Sherry raised an eyebrow, and Simon felt a surge of anger. What, she didn't believe he had friends? Simon stood and said he wasn't hungry. He tried to leave, but Sherry rushed to the door. She looked him in the eyes and said, "Simon, things are going to change soon." Simon couldn't tell if it was a promise or a threat. He didn't care to know, so he pushed past her and walked out. He had friends to meet. Ray, Eddie, and Bill weren't on the bus. They showed up at school after lunch, hungover and irritable, and they didn't say a word to Simon. It was like last night never happened. On the ride home, Simon sat near them and tried not to look pathetic. When the bus stopped by the woods, the guys got up. Simon prayed for them to notice his existence, and his wish came true. Ray turned back, sighed, and cocked his head. "Come on." Simon walked with the guys deep into the woods. Eddie and Bill were cheery, but Ray was withdrawn. Simon realized he still had the Walkman on, so maybe that was pissing Ray off. but putting it away would just draw more attention to it, right? They came to a clearing and Simon saw a weathered cabin. It looked old, like centuries old. Simon asked Ray if Geist lived there. Ray just walked off. Simon followed him to a sudden drop that looked out over a deep pit. Ray was still ignoring him, and Simon couldn't stand the cold shoulder. He blurted, "I'm sorry, okay? I don't know if you're mad or if you just hate me. But here, take this. It's yours." Simon held out the Walkman. Ray stared at Simon, radiating disgust and pity. He looked at the pit, then grunted. "Eddie, Bill, grab his arms." Ray's goons ran up, grabbed Simon, and forced him to his knees. Ray reached into his jacket and pulled out the hood that Simon saw in Guy's glove box. Simon panicked. Was this a joke? An initiation? He could handle hazing, but he just had to know. With a pained look, Ray shoved the cowl over Simon's head. The boys began to chant.
Deep into the woods we went to make a sacred covenant, a brotherhood under the beast who helps us laugh and play and feast.
But when we all get what we need, then the snallygaster feeds. A shriek echoed in the trees. Simon heard dirt shift in the pit. Then something approached. Something big and hungry. Tentacles slithered across his arms. Talons grazed his chest. He was just about to scream when Ray cried, "Stop!" Ray ripped the cowl off Simon's head, and he was blinded by the setting sun. He blinked and saw that Guy stood before him. He glared at Ray, Eddie, and Bill. "Boys, I told you, the fun's not free. Tribute must be paid. The beast must feed." Ray protested, "He's just a kid, man." Geist retorted, "Exactly. You said he was a perfect tribute, expendable. Nobody would notice if he was gone." Simon's heart broke. He was just bait, a sacrificial lamb being toyed with by the pack. He was never going to be part of the family, unless... Ray was on the verge of tears. "Geist, I can't do this." Simon shot up and punched Ray until he toppled. He walked to Geist, drawing himself to his tallest height. "Ray can't do it, but I can. If it means I'm in, I'll find you a damn tribute." Ray parked Guy's car across the street from the gas station on the edge of town. Simon sat beside him. He looked at the convenience store. There was one employee, a woman in a dowdy uniform pulling a trash bag out of a bin, totally oblivious. Ray turned to Simon. "You don't have to do this." Simon chuckled, trying to show Ray how tough he was, but deep down he was worried. He didn't know how he was going to kidnap a stranger, how he'd keep calm when he heard her screams. He looked over to the Walkman in Ray's lap, then he grabbed it, put the headphones on, and pressed play. Geist Motown mix blared in his ears, and Simon felt a rush of energy. He could do this. He got out of the car, quietly stalking to the station. The attendant was loading a garbage bag into a dumpster, and her back was turned. Simon pulled the hood from his pocket, just as she sensed that someone was behind her. Simon whipped the cowl over her head. The woman struggled. She was stronger than she looked, and Simon was weaker than he thought. So he shoved her. Her head hit the edge of the dumpster, and she crumpled to the ground. Simon and Ray carried the limp woman through the woods. Simon held her arms and Ray held her legs. Simon had to admit his bravado was fading. This woman was heavy, and he was just a kid. Still, he saw a guy's silhouette waiting at the pit, 100 feet away. Eddie and Bill paced by him. Simon just had to hold on a little longer. Suddenly, he felt a thud. The woman dropped from his arms into the dirt. He whipped his head back. Ray had let go. He said he was too winded, but Simon knew better. Ray was sabotaging him. He clenched his jaw and surveyed the terrain. There was a slant leading to the pit, so maybe she'd roll. Simon bent down and pushed the body, but she barely budged. He grunted, then kicked her belly. Now she rolled forward a foot. Okay, this would work. Simon kicked the woman over and over, harder and harder. until she rolled down the dirt path and landed at the edge of the pit. Guy's eyes crinkled with glee. "Simon, you are something else." Simon smiled, but then the woman began to stir. He wasn't sure he could handle the reminder that this was a real person he was hurting, so he told Geist to get on with it. Whatever ritual they were doing, let it be done. Geist shook his head. "No cowards in this family. Be a man. Take off her hood and take stock of what you're doing." Simon took a deep breath. Then he leaned down and ripped off his tribute's hood. His mother stared back at him. Sherry pleaded, "Simon, what the hell is going on? Who are these people?" Simon panicked. I don't understand. You're a nurse." Sherry sobbed. She was. But she'd moved to day shift so she could pick up a side gig at the gas station. She'd let her anger about Simon's dad create a rift between them. She resented having to provide for him. But when she felt him pull away, she realized if Simon needed more, then she'd work her ass off to give him that. She begged, "Please, Simon, just take me home." A strange hope crept into Simon's heart. "Could you really forgive me?" Sherry nodded. "I can, baby. I will. I promise." But Simon saw the fear and disgust in her eyes and knew she'd never forgive him. Their bond had been frayed, and now he'd broken it. So he pushed his mother into the pit. He heard her tumble and scream and looked to Geist for reassurance. Geist opened his mouth and his terrifying screech rang out. Scales and fur sprouted across his flesh. His forehead tattoo of an eye pulsed until his skin split and a real eye bulged out of his forehead. His mouth transformed into a sharp silver beak. He doubled in size, then tripled. Wings erupted from his back as he rose up into the air. His arms and legs split, becoming a mess of talons and tentacles. There wasn't a beast in the pit that Geist worshipped. He was the beast. A revolting mix of dragon, bird, and squid. A whole family of animals in one horrifying form. The monster flew high, then dove into the pit. Simon closed his eyes, but he heard every single crunch, slurp, and scream as his mother was eaten alive. Soon, Geist dragged himself out of the pit, back in human form. He hopped to his feet, all giddy, and told the boys it was time to move along. With a rush of adrenaline, Simon ran to join them. He'd proven himself, and he was part of the pack. But before he got close, Geist put his hand on Simon's chest. "Not you." Simon didn't understand. He deserved this. The other boys were cowards. He'd found their tribute. Geist nodded sadly. "My boys may be cowards. I have hope. Maybe at the next year's sacrifice they'll have my pride. For now, they have my mercy, because they don't have anyone else." Simon screamed that he didn't either. But Geist shook his head. "You did. And you gave your mama up for pretty toys and a pat on the head. If you're so willing to betray the family you've got, I don't want you anywhere near mine." Geist wrapped his arms around Ray, Eddie, and Bill, looking like a predator and a protector. Then he took his family back into the woods. Simon fell to his knees, too stunned to make a sound. Not that anyone would hear him if he did. He was completely, utterly alone. They say Simon begged the police to arrest him for killing his mom, only they couldn't find any evidence that he had. Best as they could tell, she'd run off just like his dad had. He was sent to a foster family, but he couldn't adjust. He ran away, never finishing school, spent time in a psych ward until he was discharged. Apart from his odd belief in monsters, they said he was perfectly healthy. There was no place for him there either. Now Simon was back in Annapolis, the closest thing he'd once had to a home, loitering outside the fancy restaurant while me and my friends celebrated our success. Everyone else had moved on from discussing him, eager to tell happier stories. But I kept looking out the window at him, heartbroken at the unfairness. I don't know if Simon's story was all true, but life had dealt him a bad hand. What happened to him could have happened to me or anyone else in my crew. We all grew up lacking. That made us mad, and anger and need are a terrible combination. They blind you. You can't see what you do have or appreciate the people who do support you despite their own pain. We all had the same urge for connection and purpose that Simon had, but we were lucky enough to find each other, and that helped us find our paths. Maybe if we'd been kinder to Simon, well, I guess we'd never know, would we? I realized I'd been ruminating for too long. When my eyes focused, I saw Simon staring at me. Recognition and yearning washed the hard years off his face, and he looked like a hopeful kid again. He lifted his hand to wave at me. I'm ashamed to say it, but I turned away. I had my own family to think of.
Run Fool is a production of Ballin' Studios, Campside Media, and Atwell Media. It is hosted and executive produced by me, Rodney Barnes. This episode was written by Amin Osman and produced by Abakar Adan and Lee Mengistu. Editing by Abakar Adan. It was also sound designed and mixed by Kevin Seaman. Creature vocalization by Terry Cashburn and Colette Anderson. And artwork by Jessica Clogston Kiner. Production support by Jeremy Bond and Cole LaCasio. Special thanks to our operations team, Doug Slaywin, Ashley Warren, Sabina Mara, and Destiny Dingle. Executive producers at Ballin Studios are Mr. Ballin, Nick Witters, and Zach Levitt. Executive producers at Atwell Media are Will Malnati and Rosie Guerin. Executive producers at Campside Media are Matt Scher, Josh Dean, Vanessa Gregoriadis, Adam Hoff. Thanks for listening, and see you next week. Deep.